I'll ask counsel to please indicate your appearances, and I'll ask also the appellant to indicate how much time he wishes to reserve.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. Sarah Spencer and Nathan Alder with the law firm of Christensen & Jensen. On behalf of the appellant, Colleen Hill, I would reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. Paul Delknap and David Brown for Superior Property Management.
Thank you. Ms. Spencer.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Sarah Spencer on behalf of the appellant, Colleen Hill. As indicated, I would like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case raises the question of whether the appellee, Superior Property Management Incorporated, owed a tort duty of reasonable care to Colleen Hill.
Counsel, duty is usually a question of law that the court decides. What happens when the issue of duty turns on disputed facts?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct, that in most cases, duty is a question of law for the court to resolve. However, this court has issued prior opinions, for example, the Tallman versus City of Hurricane case, where there are disputed facts that pertain to the issue of duty, it must be submitted to the jury. In this case, the appellant's position is that we have submitted sufficient record evidence that is undisputed that does establish a duty of care on the part of Superior Property Management, both to not undertake affirmative acts that pose a risk of harm, as well as to specifically protect Ms. Hill from dangers that exist on the land. And that's why we submit that there are three independent bases upon which this court must reverse the summary judgment entered by the district court in favor of Superior Property Management. And I'll address each of these in turn. In short, the first reason is that we've introduced undisputed record evidence that Superior's affirmative acts, its affirmative acts, caused a foreseeable risk of harm to a class of plaintiffs within which Ms. Hill is a member. Secondly, even if this court is not persuaded that Superior affirmatively, through its acts, caused a foreseeable risk of harm, it qualifies as a possessor of land, as that term is used in the Restatement Second and Restatement Third of torts. And finally, if this court does not believe that Superior rises to the level of a possessor of land, it still owes analogous duties to a possessor of land under numerous sections of the restatement. So I will first address affirmative acts. The law in the state of Utah is well established that an act, as opposed to a failure to act, so misfeasance rather than acts of nonfeasance, almost always carry with them a duty of care to individuals within the foreseeable risk of harm. And this is not a novel concept within the law of torts. This concept developed at common law.
What is the affirmative act that was undertaken here that caused the harm?
Yes, Your Honor. The affirmative act is altering the natural condition of the land by using a lawnmower to shave down tree growth that were occurring in a grass common area that was located directly in front of Ms. Hill's condominium unit. So the evidence in the record is that there was a tree that was growing upon a grass common area, and that as some particular kinds of trees tend to do, it was sending out shoots, which are sometimes referred to as suckers or shoots. In other words, attempts by the tree to generate new trees.
Is the allegation that Superior should have mowed the lawn in a different way? I mean,
yes.
That would be an affirmative act if there was something about the way they mowed the lawn that was improper. But I don't see that allegation here, at least in the summary judgment papers below.
The allegation is certainly that the mowing is the affirmative act, and there are a couple different aspects of how that affirmative act posed a risk of harm to Ms. Hill. In the summary judgment proceedings, the main thrust of Superior's argument was that Ms. Hill allegedly knew of the tree growth's existence and therefore that it owed no duty. So there was a significant emphasis place on the fact that Superior, through its mowing activities, often allowed the grass to grow such that it obscured the shaven, mown down sticks that were clustered in more than 60 groupings throughout the lawn area.
Counsel, wasn't there evidence that this accident occurred outside of the grass growing season, so to speak?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
So no mowing was going on at the time, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. However, we've also introduced record evidence that Superior is in charge of the land and that they have been performing mowing in addition to other maintenance activities on this particular grass common area for, at the current time, nearly 20 years. The testimony was that Superior has been doing these activities since the mid-1990s. So this isn't a matter of Superior not being on premises yet to engage in mowing. Superior's testimony in the court below was that it is paid more than $12,000 a month to maintain this premises, and that it is on site 7 days a week. It's on call for emergencies. The only days where it's not there is on holidays, unless there is an emergency.
But if the allegation is that they should have cut the grass lower so that you could see the tree shoots and not trip over them, then I think Chief Justice Durant's point is a concern for you, and I don't see how there can be a duty arising out of not mowing the grass lower if they didn't have a contractual responsibility to be mowing the grass yet at that period of time.
Well, we would dispute that, Your Honor. There hasn't been any evidence introduced by the appellee to show that it wasn't under a contractual obligation to engage in mowing. The testimony was that it had not yet mowed that year. But our duty is...
I thought the evidence was undisputed that the mowing season hadn't started yet, that it typically wasn't until, maybe I'm going to get the dates wrong, but after the 2nd of April or something like that. When did this accident happen?
This accident happened on April 2nd, 2009. And, Your Honor, yes, you are correct that Superior testified that according to its decision-making about the maintenance activities that should be undertaken on this land, it had not yet decided to undertake mowing. That may be consistent with what it had done in prior years. But the duty that we argue for in this case is not so narrowly restricted to be a duty to remove the tree roots. We contend that Superior affirmatively created this condition by mowing them. If the court
I'm sorry if I can interrupt you here. Here your argument is that they should have cut the grass lower, and if by contract they didn't have an obligation to be cutting the grass yet because it was only April 2nd, then I don't think that's a basis for a duty. Maybe I'm misunderstanding you.
Let me clarify our position, Your Honor. Our argument is not simply that Superior failed to cut the grass lower. We contend that Superior, in effect, owes the duty of a possessor of land. And the duty of a possessor of land is set forth in Restatement Section 343.
So if I can interrupt you again, you're switching horses here.
Right. Well, I was about to explain why the duty that we argue for is not limited to mowing. We believe that there are many other things that Superior could have and, in fact, was legally obligated to do.
Well, can you back up, though, to the mowing duty? Is it just that the grass was cut? The claim isn't just that the grass was allowed to grow too long. Isn't the claim that the tree stumps shouldn't have been, I guess, mowed at all over the 20-year period, and that it was the mowing and the short nature of the tree growth that was caused by the mowing that gave rise to the fall?
That's absolutely correct, Justice Parrish. Our position is that if these tree growths had simply been permitted to grow up to the sky and Superior had elected to mow around them, they would have been visible. They would have been significantly less dangerous had they simply matured into trees, as is their natural propensity. Instead, what Superior did, it came to the land, it used the lawnmower, and it shaved them off to ground level.
This strikes me as your best argument, but I couldn't find anything in the summary judgment papers in which it looked like you had made this argument, and so I wonder whether you've preserved it.
Your Honor, in the complaint, record sites 4, 5, and 7, we expressly allege that the affirmative maintenance activities caused the hazard at issue. On record site 241 and 388, we introduced evidence that the groupings of sticks were the result of Superior's repeated mowing of the area in question. And on record sites 263 through 264, we expressly argued that Superior's deficient mowing caused the hazard. And I do agree, Your Honor, that the discussion with respect to the creation also related to Superior's mowing. So in reality...
But I'm sorry again, but I thought that in the argument that you made at summary judgment, when you talked about deficient mowing, it was you let the grass grow too long, and so the tree stumps were invisible. And so I think the point that Justice Parrish asked you about, and the one that you endorsed, makes sense to me and may well be a basis for a duty, but at least in the argument part, that those pages that you just cited in the argument part of your summary judgment papers, I didn't think you were really talking about that kind of negligence in mowing. Can you help me with that?
I do agree that in that section of the brief, we were talking about a failure to mow. But I also submit to the court that the argument that Superior, through its acts, created the hazard, combined with the allegations in the complaint that the maintenance affirmatively caused the hazard, and the evidence that was introduced that's undisputed in the record in the statement of facts, that the groupings of sticks that were hidden by the grass were caused by the mowing, and Superior doesn't dispute that fact. The focus of that section of the argument related to the mowing activities, and part of that relating to the mowing activities is the shaving down of the growth, the creation of sticks, trip hazards that are 2 inches, that are frequently obscured by the grass, that are clustered throughout this common area, combined with the failure to mow, which also increased the hazard, because when the grass grew long, it covered up the tree growth. So it was an argument that addressed both the failure to mow as well as the affirmative creation.
So is your theory with respect to the negligence in mowing that wherever there was a tree shoot, that what a reasonable mower would have done is to go around it and leave it there and let it grow up?
There are a multitude of options that we suggest Superior could have undertaken. Assuming that Superior has a duty equivalent to that of a possessor of land, it imposes a duty of reasonable care. There are a lot of options that would include treating the growth, the shaved down growth, with chemicals, simply getting out some kind of axe or shovel to dig them out, perhaps putting landscape flags, as we've often seen sprinkler companies will use, that have an orange flag on the top, maybe using some spray paint to mark the tree growth that it had shaven down through its affirmative acts, or removing them entirely, as was the case and is exactly what occurred after Ms. Hill reported her serious injuries to Superior.
I mean, all of those things sound like omissions and failures to act to me, which is a different story, and unless there's some contractual or other obligation to undertake those things, then an omission is not actionable.
Well, that's why we've introduced evidence, Your Honor, that Superior, in fact, is a possessor of land, as that term is defined in the restatement. And the restatement second and third define that as a party in possession with control. And that's why I see that my time is up.
You can finish this answer if you'd like.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. That's why we introduced evidence that Superior has regularly, throughout the nearly 20 years it's worked at this premises, undertaken acts that are well beyond the scope of its maintenance contract, and acts that exhibit control, very
could
broad.
Could I ask you about that? Were any of those affirmative acts, did they involve any of the things that you just went through, putting some kind of herbicide on the stumps, or, you know, digging out the stumps? Or is there any evidence of that?
Well, Your Honor, we did introduce evidence that after Ms. Hill's fall, Superior Property Management removed the tree growth in question. Now, I understand that Superior alleges that's not so, but we're here on an appeal of a grant of summary judgment against Ms. Hill, and the facts, to the extent they're disputed on that point, must be construed in Ms. Hill's favor. And we introduce evidence.
Can subsequent remedial measures be relevant to establishing a duty to undertake affirmative acts?
Well, I would submit that this issue, it would not require an affirmative act because the control that Superior exhibited and had over the premises creates a special relationship under Section 328E of the Restatement Second, Section 49 of the Restatement Third, and the definition of the duty-defining rule for a possessor of land in Sections 343 and 343A. And when a party is a possessor of land, it is not only required to avoid affirmative acts posing a hazard to another party, it's required to take action to make a premises reasonably safe. And because they did exhibit sufficient control across the entire premises, as well as the common area in question. And we showed that immediately after Ms. Hill's fall, Superior, without instruction from the landowner, cordoned off the area and excluded others from entering upon it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Spencer, Mr. Belknap.
Your Honors, I would like to start by reading a response that Waterbury made to a letter that Ms. Hill wrote to them about the tree shoots in the lawn. Waterbury had received a letter from Ms. Hill that had about 15 paragraphs of complaints, and one of them was about the tree shoots. And this is what the Homeowners Association said in December 2008, about 4 months before this event. Maintenance is aware of this problem, as you mentioned, mows down the shoots. We are also aware that mowing down does not resolve the issue because it is the nature of certain trees to send up shoots from roots. The larger trees that help make Waterbury's grounds so beautiful would have to be removed completely and all their roots killed in order to prevent them from sending up shoots. We try also to keep the ground chemicals to a minimum so as not to endanger the health of small pets. Now, having said that, we believe that the trial court's decision that there was no duty for two reasons should be affirmed. First of all, under the contract, Superior has never been responsible for major tree trimming, and also it's undisputed in the testimony that tree removal is not the responsibility of Superior, it is the responsibility of Waterbury.
Wasn't there also evidence, though, that Superior acted as the contact point for receiving complaints and that there was some discussion in a homeowners meeting that Superior needed to do something about the tree root problem?
You're correct, Justice Parrish. There was a homeowners association meeting that Superior was asked to investigate the tree root problem. And Mr. Voss has testified that he went over and looked at that area with the president of the Homeowners Association. So yes, you're correct.
But would that, I guess, duty to investigate and the position of being the entity that received complaints and you know, the eyes and ears of the Homeowners Association with respect to potential safety hazards not give rise to a duty?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because we're talking about the tree and tree roots, and I'm going to stay with that. We're not talking about burglaries or other issues that have been raised in the appellant's briefing. But as to tree and tree roots, it's absolutely undisputed from the Homeowners Association president that Superior does not have the responsibility to remove trees, which would include removing roots. If you take the roots out, you don't have a tree.
And wouldn't you have the option of cutting the shoots down to ground level? And couldn't that be construed as a minor trimming pursuant to the contract?
Well, Superior had the responsibility to mow the grass. And it's undisputed that that was one of their responsibilities, Chief Justice. And the testimony has been that they have always started that the second week of April. The plaintiff's testimony, which is her own statement, was that the grass at the time of this event was about 3 inches tall. It was dead, and the shoots were hidden within that grass because of the color of them. So if I'm answering your question, we did mow the grass.
Well, I guess my question goes to the contractual provision that obligates Superior to conduct minor trimming of trees.
Well,
and I'm wondering whether cutting those shoots down to ground level might be construed as minor trimming of a tree.
And I don't think so, Your Honor. That's mowing the grass and...
As I recall, the provision refers to trimming branches, and I suppose the response would be it's not a branch is something that comes out of a trunk, not a shoot that comes up out of the ground.
Yeah, it says contractor will trim smaller and lower branches when necessary. And the Waterbury witness testified that we do have Superior take off lower branches if they're bumping up against a building or something like that. But the Waterbury testimony was that absolutely they don't remove trees. They never have. That has been something that Waterbury has contracted for with South Valley. And with due respect to counsel, we don't believe there's any credible evidence that Superior removed this tree.
Maybe it's a philosophical question, but I guess maybe the question is, if the shoot comes up from the ground, at what point is it transformed from a root into a branch?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That takes me, I guess, Your Honor, to the fact that this court has frequently said that the question of duty is obviously a legal question. And the question of duty is weighing policy judgments and relationships.
Well, but what do we do when a question of duty depends, and I understand it's a legal question, but it depends on disputed factual issues?
I don't think there's disputed factual issues that would not allow the trial court and this court to determine duty as a matter of law, just as the trial court did, okay, Justice Barrett.
Okay, but what, take a hypothetical case where the existence of duty may depend on disputed facts, then does it go to the jury on a special verdict form, or how do we work that?
Well, let me see if I can answer your question, and hit me again if I haven't. But in this case, interestingly enough, Justice Parrish, on the one hand, now plaintiff is arguing that we created a hazard by mowing, and also alternatively arguing we created a hazard by not mowing.
Well, I think that it seems to me that the problem was twofold. One was that the grass was too long, and the second part is that the tree shoots were too short. And it seems to me that both of those are the result of mowing that was undertaken by your client.
And I guess our point from a policy matter, Your Honor, is when you have a tree that has roots, if you don't mow around it, then the grass is going to ultimately get up to like a field, like a pasture. If you do mow around it, then you're going to be going over the roots. And the roots are not branches, in our view. And it's not a factual question, in our view, that would stop the trial court or this court from determining duty as a matter of law.
Well, what about, I understand that part of your answer to the question I'm about to ask you is that this wasn't preserved in the summary judgment papers, but if it had been preserved, wouldn't it sustain a duty to allege that mowing over the course of 20 years is causing these, you know, things to become clumps of sticks rather than one individual shoot, and that could be negligence and sustain a duty? Whether you can prove causation or not, I don't know, but wouldn't that sustain a duty?
Your Honor, I would like to answer the question this way, and that is, number one, as a matter of policy considerations, what guidance would a court give as to when you should or shouldn't mow and where you should or shouldn't mow around a tree because they have roots, first of all? Secondly...
Well, but that to me seems like a negligence question for the jury. Was the particular course or, you know, of how to deal with the shoots one that was negligent or not? But if there's no dispute that the shoots were the result of Superior's act in mowing them down, it seems like the duty question would be answered in the affirmative, and it would proceed, and your point would be resolved on the negligence part of the the analysis.
Well, I would still say, Your Honor, what guidance would the trial court or this court give to a jury about when you should or shouldn't mow? Where's the standard going to be?
Well, it's just the same. It's the learned hand, you know, reasonable person standard that we all learned about in law school. And it is subjective and fuzzy, but it's what we've got, right?
Well, then let me go to the what the plaintiff argued at the summary judgment argument. Plaintiff argued that had these been mowed, this is on record 1098, page 31 and 47, had this been mowed, there wouldn't have been a duty because she would have been able to see them. Now the argument has transformed itself.
And that's the preservation problem, and I think that is a significant one. It doesn't seem to me like they really made the argument in the summary judgment papers that they made more effectively in the briefs on appeal here with respect to the affirmative act of mowing. The way I read the summary judgment papers, it was focused on this idea that you should have mowed sooner so as to make the stumps visible.
And that's what they're arguing now. Alternatively, we created it or we created it by not mowing. But at summary judgment level, it was, had you mowed, and these would have been visible and there wouldn't have been a duty. And that's right from the transcript that was argued below at those citations that I gave you. The Talman case was mentioned to the court. This was a case down in southern Utah where the defendant was digging a trench. And the trench they dug was 7 feet deep. And they said contractually, we're not responsible for shoring, and so we didn't have a problem when the trench fell in and killed the person. We don't believe, going back to the questions that have been asked of me, that we created a hazardous condition. We believe we were simply fulfilling the contract to mow the grass. And I don't know where you could draw the line otherwise. So if you look at the AMS case, Magnesium Corp case that this court decided, when the lake overflowed, went through a dike and burst the dike out on the Great Salt Lake and went into Magnesium Corp's ponds, this court said it was not the defendant's acts in the creation of the dikes or the failure to create proper dikes, it was the lake that was rising. Now, in our view, that case stands for the proposition that trees have roots. Trees send off shoots and growth. And if you kill those, plaintiff's counsel has indicated, well, you could put chemicals on them. If you put chemicals on the roots, it goes to the tree.
Or you could also just let them grow so they would be visible and not shear them down to the point where they're not visible.
Well, and Waterbury has made a decision. You're right. You could have huge clumps of trees coming up, and Waterbury has made a decision that that's their decision.
Well, was there any evidence adduced that Waterbury specifically directed your client to mow the shoots down?
No.
Or was that a decision that your client made with respect to how to fulfill its maintenance obligation?
We mowed the grass, and the testimony from Mr. Voss from Superior was that he went out with the Waterbury Homeowners Association president after that reference was made that you asked me about earlier, and they looked at the area. And there was no direction from Waterbury to do anything differently other than to keep the grass mowed during the growing season, as the contract indicated. So, Your Honors, with respect to the claims about the restatement, we do not think that Superior is a possessor of land. Required to meet that standard would be occupation with the intent to control, or under the third edition that was referenced in the briefing, is occupation and control. Now, certainly we had things that we did under the contract with respect to the pool, with respect to going to homeowners association meetings when we were asked, other things like that. But we did not exercise control over the removal of trees and tree removal. And we're not a possessor of land. That being said, we do not believe that we created a dangerous condition And as a matter of law, as you look at whether you do it under a standard that's set forth in the Yaws case or the Normandy case or the B.R. Hale or B.R. West case, that if you look at the policy judgments and you look at this matter, we do not think that there was a duty, and we think the court decided this matter correctly. Unless there's any other questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Belknap. Ms. Spencer.
Thank you, Your Honor. We've just heard Superior contend that it had no responsibility whatsoever with respect to tree removal. I would simply direct Your Honors to Record Site 505, where the HOA meeting minutes document that in August of 2009, a few months after Ms. Hill's fall, it says John, who is John Voss from Superior Property Management, was able to save the association about $350 by having his crew remove trees. That's exactly why Superior cannot fall back on its maintenance contract or a contention that it had no responsibility with respect to removal.
Sorry, did that happen after this accident?
Yes, Your Honor, that record site is referencing after accident.
So I could understand a course of conduct informing the construction of the contract, you know, if it happens prior to the incident in question, but how is it relevant if it happens after the fact? How does it?
Your Honor has referenced a construction of the contract, and it's the appellant's position that the maintenance contract is essentially a red herring. This court has recognized in the Tallman case that a contractual duty is not dispositive of a tort duty of reasonable care. And that's why this court recognized in Tallman that the trench digger, even though its contract expressly provided that it was not responsible for shoring and protection of the trench, and the shoring and the protection of the trench is what caused another employee of another contractor to die, this court nonetheless recognized the existence of a dispute of fact on the issue of duty. Certainly in Tallman, this court could have come out and said the contract did not require it. In fact, it expressly said that the defendant had no obligation, and therefore there is no duty. That is not what this court held. This court recognizes the dispute of fact. And so, Your Honor, with respect, I do not believe that the maintenance contract, setting aside what it provides with respect to trimming branches or removing trees, being silent on that point,
well,
is positive.
It is relevant, though, to the question of control.
Absolutely, Justice Durham, and that's why we've contended that Superior is a possessor of land.
Right.
The control is broad. They participate in every decision regarding maintenance activities on the premises. They are the first line of defense for inspecting and looking for hazards. They are the ones who receive maintenance requests from residents, unilaterally look at them, and decide whether it merits action.
Don't possessors have a right to exclude others? And I assume Superior doesn't have that right.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree, and that's because we adduced evidence, although it may be disputed, the inferences must be viewed in Ms. Hill's favor. We adduced evidence that within a couple days of Ms. Hill's fall, somebody went out there and stuck rebar in the ground around this grass common area and wrapped caution tape around it and excluded anyone from going there. Waterbury, the owner, clearly testified upon notice in its 30B6 deposition, it didn't do that. It didn't know who did it. It didn't participate in that decision.
Is that excluding someone, though, or is that just marking that this is a dangerous area?
Our position, Your Honor, is that it is, in effect, exactly what a possessor would be entitled to do, which is excluding others from making use of that area. Now, in the last few minutes that I have, I do want to address the alternative bases for a finding of duty, because I have sensed, Justice Lee, that you have concerns about the preservation of the affirmative act causing the hazard, the mowing, shaving down the roots. Our position is that even if Superior is not a possessor of land, it still owes a duty of care under analogous sections of the restatement. Specifically, we cited to Restatement Section 383, which recognizes that an independent contractor, although not a possessor, who undertakes activities upon the land is subject to the same duty of care. And we've cited numerous cases applying that section of the restatement, one of which involved a realtor who was showing a home, and that realtor was held to owe a duty under 383 for undertaking an act on behalf of the owner. We cited two cases involving a janitorial company and a cleaning company who undertook cleaning services for an owner and someone slipped and fell. They were held to have an analogous duty as a possessor.
I guess I read that provision in a more limited way. It seems to me that all it says is that with respect to the acts that you've undertaken to perform, you have the same duty as a possessor would. But so then that just gets us back to what acts had Superior undertaken to perform on behalf of the Homeowners Association.
And the act that undertook to perform was the act of mowing the grass common area. And so the test under, once we're past the affirmative act question and we're looking at a duty of a possessor under the restatement, that creates a special relationship. So there's not only a duty to avoid affirmative acts, but also to take action to protect. And that's why we submit that one Superior agreed contractually and, in effect, undertook the responsibility of mowing. It had a duty to do so non-negligently. Your Honors, all we are asking for is our day in court. Whether the mowing was negligence, that's an issue for the jury to decide. But it undertook to mow, and it did that act at the request of, with the direction of, and under the authority of the landowner. That does create a duty of care under Restatement Section 383. And we would respectfully ask that this court reverse the grant of summary judgment in favor of Superior. Unless the court has any additional questions for me. Thank you, Your Honor.
We thank counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement and we'll now be adjourned.